One day, we drew a 50-plus-year-old Technicolor musical, and I found it both delightful and moving. That film was Fiddler on the Roof. Unfortunately, today we drew The Unsinkable Molly Brown, which was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hello, I am unabashed Hufflepuff Sean Collier, here with reluctant Slytherin Robin Hitchcock.
Trans rights are human rights.
And apathetic Hufflepuff Camila Adams.
Zanzibar.
Yeah, probably. Yes, thank you, Robin. Trans women are women, trans men are men. Non-binary people are neither, and if you can't figure that out, that's a you problem. Yep. Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, our first mainline Harry Potter episode. That was last time, 57, tied with Beverly Hills Cop 2. I do not remember doing a Beverly Hills Cop 2 episode.
Me either. I was just trying to, I started watching the Axel thing last night, and I was like, I don't think I've seen any other Beverly Hills Cop other than the first one.
If you had asked me before I looked that up, I was like, oh, I've definitely only seen the first. What happens in the second one?
Listen to our episode and find out.
And apparently we didn't like it. Like 57.
We just like erased that from the memory banks completely.
I might be conflating it with the original one, which I do think is a genuinely good movie.
Yeah.
But I want to say it was a tonal shift issue.
Oh,
that it was jokes and sometimes it would be very abruptly awful crime. And then it was like, I don't feel good.
But relevant, did you watch the Axel?
I fell asleep. I mean, I was enjoying myself before. I mean, mind you, I did have like a strong whiskey drink as I was watching it.
I think that's the right way to watch it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But I did fall asleep.
But now this, we're recording a little later than we planned. And I assure you, I watched this movie and remember some of it. I had certainly never seen this before. I don't think any of us had seen this before.
No. I didn't even know the lore of like Molly Brown or anything like that.
Well, I was 13 when James Cameron's Titanic came out. Okay. So I am well aware
everything
of everything
about Titanic. Yes. You're well versed in all things Titanic.
Although I guess the thing that I will say about this movie is get to the fireworks factory already.
When are they going to get to the fireworks factory?
So this is a good question. So you said, what did you do in order to become well-versed in the Titanic at that age? Because we weren't, internet wasn't internet.
Oh,
did you go to the library?
It was in my house. My family were very much early adopters. I had Prodigy.
Oh, okay.
Right. Like I was on the internet in 1993.
Okay. Wow.
But what I was going to say is that I didn't actually know that much about like her upbringing. I knew the sort of like old money, new money dichotomy because that is in the movie Titanic.
Right.
And I knew that there was Kathy a movie Bates. About okay. her. Right.
Yeah.
But that was sort of where it stopped for me.
Gotcha.
And
to be clear, her upbringing in this movie is pure fiction.
Okay, that was going to be my question. Is like, this is fascinating to me as like an early influencer, for lack of a better, somebody who was famous for being famous, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how. Yeah, okay, early. I mean, you can find those people 30 years earlier, but.
Sure. I mean, I'm sure there are people like that going back to, Moses. You know, right, exactly, like, literally, yes. So
Catherine the Great, very big.
But like, did this woman have a PR machine behind her, or did the magic happen?
I think the magic happened because of the Titanic stuff. Not that she was not prominent and well-known before that, but the magic all came from the Titanic stuff, which, to your fireworks factory point, my last note was, There's 10 minutes left and we're still not on the boat. She's the boat lady. What? Why? Or what is all of this?
It took a very long time. Very long. It's to the point where I just stopped wondering at that point. I'm like, well, maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. Maybe she's not the boat lady. That is.
At one point, she's in her gaudy mansion, mm-hmm. and there's the double staircase with the clock on it, and yes. I was like, oh, they're on the Titanic, because I recognized it.
That's what I thought in the trailer. I was like, oh, so this is what we're going to do that.
Right.
And then
now, my theory there is that they were attempting to reuse sets, because this movie seems like it was made for 18 cents.
Exactly.
After inflation.
Like, that was one of the things. I was like, this reads as a play, because we're just like, this. Your three houses, they are the same set.
They are the same, and just everything looks and seems cheap. Mm-hmm. This poor movie.
It's well, look, you've certainly, there's no one listening who has seen this, so someone ought to tell those people what the unsinkable Molly Brown is about, and here's Camila to do just that. Right. Whenever you're ready.
Molly is dirt poor and looking for a way out. She runs away from home and meets Johnny, who offers her a place to stay. While teaching her to read, Johnny catches feelings, but Molly needs a millionaire. He builds her a whole house. She gives in and marries Johnny. She gets a bunch of money. I skipped why, how. She hides it in the stove, and it gets burnt up. They strike gold. That's cool. And move to the fancy Pennsylvania Avenue. There's a whole Beverly Hillbillies vibe to Molly and Johnny. They don't really fit in with the other rich folk, and they get shunned at a party. So they throw their own, but nobody shows up. The town priest suggests they go to Europe to get some polish. Molly is a hit in Paris and goes back home to show those jerks what's up. Suck it, Gladys. Molly's people from way, way back home show up, and the fancy party turns to a hootenanny, which turns into a Donnybrook. The Browns can't live with the shame. Johnny hates it there, so he goes back to the mining town while Molly goes back to Europe. Molly misses Johnny so much she takes the Titanic back to America. She survives and is welcomed back with a parade, a party, and Johnny, who seems to be quietly pooping behind the bedroom door.
Just right on time.
Donnybrook, that's a word I haven't heard in quite some time.
I love that word.
Well, and if we're in a spelling bee, you did effectively use Hootenanny and Donnybrook in a sentence. Yay. That gives the proper context. Yeah, that there is so much first act to this movie.
98% of this movie is first act.
And then the ending is, well, oh, she came back. She thought he wasn't there. He was.
It was very,
bye.
It's just, but he was looking very strange behind does that
he,
door.
Does he take her back?
I guess.
I think that's assumed. I think the kiss.
Yeah, they sing.
I saw this over a week ago.
They sing Colorado again. Nah. Colorado is no Oklahoma, by the way. This film was released June 11th, 1964, the ninth number one movie of the year. That's way too early for us to have week by week returns. But it did take the top spot kind of repeatedly that summer. It won the week of July 22nd. It won the week of August 5th. And then for five more weeks in August and September, this is at least an 8-week winner.
Wow.
You know, there were just fewer movies.
Yeah.
Variety said it was third for the year with at least $11 million, just behind previous episode subject, It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, and ahead of My Fair Lady, Cleopatra, and Charade. This movie made more money than My Fair Lady and Charade.
Wow.
Yeah. People liked big old musicals. People liked to go to the theater and see the pretty people and the singing and the dancing.
These are very forgettable songs.
This is based on a 1960 stage musical, so just a few years earlier, that had way more songs in it. There's almost no songs from.
I was gonna say.
Yeah. Like, it has a full, it is a long musical with lots of songs, and I think six or seven of them are in the movie.
Yeah, they go lengthy periods of time very without
long,
a song.
Well, yeah. They're also very long songs.
The one song where it's the Donnybrook is 20 minutes?
And that is not in the stage version. That was the original written for this movie.
Oh. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they only use six or so songs for the musical and added one.
Yes.
And that was probably before they figured out the whole you got to write a song for the movie to get an Oscar nomination thing.
I think they just were in there and were like, we got to have a big number.
Okay.
Late in this thing. It's been a while since Billy Up to the Bar. So Tammy Grimes was the actress who played Molly Brown in the stage musical. She won the Tony for it, but Hollywood dumped her immediately. The studio first wanted Shirley MacLaine. There was a contract dispute there.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa. Whoa. Postcards from the Edge.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, in which Shirley MacLaine plays Debbie Reynolds.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, you know, they're
Robin's
good.
Mind just
showing up at the same auditions.
I thought about makes Postcards sense. From the Edge for most of the time. I just was like watching this movie through the prism of Postcards from the Edge.
And all I was doing was like, told you so, told you so, told you, told you, told you so.
I told you so, I told you so, told you, told you, told you so.
Oh, that's what I was hearing the entire time.
Judy Garland was in the running. It went to Debbie Reynolds. And Shirley MacLaine was big mad about it. She wanted the part and just couldn't get out of her contract and accused Debbie Reynolds of taking less money than.
Oh, I love it.
It's a, yeah.
Old Hollywood
cattiness.
I
yes.
love it.
Harv, are we going with Harv for that? It's Harvey without a Y.
I think it's Harv.
I think it's Harv.
Harv. Which I like. Sure. Cool Harv. Name. Let's bring it back.
Harv Presnell, however, did originate the role on Broadway, and this was his film debut. He tried to stay in Hollywood. It didn't really work.
He's in Fargo.
He went back to the theater and then had a big resurgence in the 90s. He's in Fargo. He's what? In Saving Private Ryan.
He's the father-in-law in Fargo. He's like grumpy and won't pay attention to poor William H. Macy.
His facial features are very small.
So
in the center
small.
Of his face.
And he's not... My overall, I'll save it for after facts, but my overall take on this movie is, I'm not saving it, what am I talking about, is that everything that makes me think I don't like musicals is very illustrated in this movie, including very obviously lip-syncing to pre-recorded songs, and he is incapable of opening his mouth.
Yeah, he was a much better looking older man. Than he was younger.
He grew into his face.
Yeah.
These two facts make no sense because he's a theater actor. You're supposed to have a big face.
Right.
Yes.
And a big expressions.
Right.
And he does not.
I think it might be that he wasn't actually singing. And so he was like, I don't know what humans look like when they sing.
He's also in Face Off, apparently. And he was recurring on Dawson's Creek.
Just so we know, his real name is George Harvey Presnell with a Y.
Okay.
Harv.
Not fancy.
Expensive baubles.
Expensive baubles.
Okay, Debbie Reynolds was nominated for Best Actress.
Who'd she lose to?
This is 1963. Patricia Neal for Hood.
No.
We
covered this movie. No, it's 1964.
1964, Julie Andrews.
In Mary Poppins. Yes, there are five more.
Oh my God,
all lost to the same movie.
All lost to Mary Poppins?
No.
All lost
to
My
five.
Fair Lady?
Yes, it lost five other Oscars to My Fair Lady.
My Fair Lady, what a weird thing that barely exists now, but really existed back then.
I think it's still pretty, I mean, it's in...
A lot of, like, remakes or, like, loosely based, blah, blah, blah?
I think Pygmalion is eternal. Okay. That's what it's based on.
Gotcha.
No, there was a big Broadway revival. I saw Fathom Events in a theater of My Fair Lady a couple years ago. My Fair
All
Lady
right.
is around.
I just don't like musicals.
You don't.
Anyway, all right, costumes.
Yes, costume design, color.
Art direction, color.
Yes.
Which is ridiculous because they kept using the same set. Mm-hmm. I guess maybe it might be the Bohemia Rhapsody. They did the best they could, guys. did the song get nominated?
No.
Oh, embarrassing.
I mean, I don't know what... there was a song Oscar that early.
Okay, how about like song score adaptation or some nonsense like that?
Scoring of music adaptation or treatment.
Okay. I'm tapped. What else do we got?
Sound and cinematography color.
Cinematography? Come on, guys. This is embarrassing for everyone.
Harv did get one of those new star Golden Globes, but this is the era where they were gave out like six of them every time.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. Finally, this is both a fact and my main point about the movie. Molly Brown, here's just some of the things that are not true. Molly Brown certainly was not a baby in a basket. She grew up in a close-knit community. She did not move to Leadville until she was 18. Her husband, what's his name? I want to say JP. John Jared.
Sure.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Her husband.
Didn't you just say what it was?
I just said Johnny.
Johnny, okay. Sure. Johnny was not a guy that accidentally found gold one day. He was a engineer who, like, engineered better mining things and got a bunch of stock for it. She learned all those languages herself in Denver. She founded the Denver Women's Club. She was accepted in Denver society. She immediately began a high-profile campaigns for women's suffrage. She was a prominent suffragette. She separated amicably from her husband. She was on the Titanic for unrelated reasons. She was not trying to get back to him. Her fame was mainly made because she threatened to murder the Titanic crew member if he didn't turn around to try to find more survivors.
Yes.
And then as soon as they all got on the Carpathian, she organized a committee of first and second class people to help the third class people and get them, not only get them food and clothing that they needed, she basically started an informal counseling service before that ship even got to America. She then later went on to work for the Red Cross in France during World War I and was awarded the French Legion of Honor. She organized the first International Women's Rights Conference and ran for Senate.
Badass!
Molly Brown, this is for you.
Could we have... Thank you. Yes.
Is she about to milkshake duck?
No.
Okay, thank God.
So, maybe some of that could have been in the movie.
Yeah. That would have been lovely. You know, just a little bit. Just one of those 12 amazing facts about her.
We have, you know, one legitimately a fascinating, accomplished person with these dramatic moments in her life, and we turn her into a, I'm gonna learn to read and write, country bumpkin.
Yeah.
Who's weird and awkward.
I need a millionaire.
Like, what the hell with this musical?
I don't understand it. It's a real waste of a based on a true story.
Yes.
Situation. It's just like, we'll just take the name and the fact that you were on the Titanic.
And barely.
Right, barely. We'll wait till the very end to talk about that.
And I guess that you came from humble beginnings and then got money, but like nothing about the way the character, this is all set up on she's defiant and she never quits and she's rough and tumble. And none of that is from reality. So why?
Well, it sounds like some of it is from reality. She was fighting for her rights and she fought she saved people's lives, yeah. Right? I'm not just basing this, I'm actually basing this way less on this movie than I am on Kathy Bates and Titanic. Mm. And also this week I watched A Night to Remember, which we'll talk more about. Mm-hmm. The Molly Brown in that movie, even though I'm not sure they ever name her,
yeah.
Total badass. Mm-hmm. And they do show that I will throw you off this life raft if you don't go back and get those people.
Yes.
Yeah. And I relate to that. Mm-hmm. Maybe this is why I'm a Slytherin. Mm-hmm. But she is bossy and I'm bossy. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you just got to tell people this is what's going to happen. And I respect and like that.
No, I don't dislike the character and I certainly like the person, and Debbie Reynolds is fine. It just, the whole movie has this air of like, well, we don't know what to do with this story. We spend like 5 minutes on her crying after he doesn't care that she burned the money.
Yeah.
And then he leaves and she thinks he's gone and all of that. It's like, why are you like desperately trying to fill time when there's interesting things about this person?
Yeah.
What are we doing here?
We're just hinging too much on the love story, quote unquote, and this whole woman needs a man. Woman needs a man. Woman needs a man.
So right.
That's what this whole thing is. And they don't want to talk about how independent and awesome and amazing the real life Molly Brown was, apparently. Because that's, I know, in 64, is that not what people wanted to see? I don't know.
Also, played on two different occasions by Cloris Leachman.
I can see that working.
What?
Something called Telephone Time, a comedy where Molly Brown appeared, and then a TV movie called SOS Titanic from 1979. Both times, Cloris Leachman.
Right on.
Have either of you ever seen The Last Picture Show?
Uh-uh.
She won an Oscar for that, and it is her playing so far against type.
Really?
Which I don't really know how much her type was established at that point, but it's fascinating.
So, is this any good?
No.
I really like the two big musical numbers. The belly up to the bar thing in the bar where everybody's dancing and the ladies of the night turn up and the Donnybrook. I found myself truly enjoying those. I think because the director is an old school musical guy. Charles Waters was like a like a 40s. He directed Ziegfeld Follies and Easter Parade and Annie Get Your Gun and that kind of thing. This is actually one of his last movies. I think he got to those and was like, I know how to show a lot of people dancing all over the place in a big set and making it frenetic and wacky. And of course, Debbie Reynolds is very good at that as well. I really like those sequences. Otherwise,
I fast-forwarded most of the songs. I was very uninterested in the musical numbers.
I enjoyed the Donnybrook. The I Want song is awful. That's the I'm going to learn his? To read. In, the, oh, hers. I guess his is also technically an I Want song.
Yeah, like what I kind of let hers play out at first, and that's when I realized I am not going to enjoy any of these songs.
Yeah. I really like Ed Begley pieing the camera.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the most important thing to me in this film. See,
despite the fact that her character is a little, and it's not, she's not exactly shallow, but it's just like we're, despite the fact that we're not really getting into the nitty gritty of like the real, what makes this real life person interesting, I really liked Molly Brown. I really like her.
Debbie Reynolds is very charming.
Yes. Yeah. I really liked her and the fact of that she was really determined to do what she wanted. She's, and she, when she went to Paris, when she went to Europe, she did not waste time just like partying or whatever. Like she actually did like take it seriously when the priest is telling her, like, go and get some culture, like learn some stuff and go see this, go see the world. And she's like, yeah, fuck yeah, I'm going to do that.
Right.
She took it seriously and she did all that. And even when she came back, you know, much more pristine and polished and learning, like knowing languages and dignitaries and whatnot, she was still humble and nice and to Gladys, which I would have been like, you know, not so nice.
One of the things I did like in this movie is Gladys is not a pure villain.
Right.
Right. They sort of give Gladys her like redemption moment of like, I was kind of an asshole before.
Right.
And I like that because a lot of movies would throw her completely under the bus.
Yeah.
And that's why for this week's Letterboxd list, I picked films that pass the Bechdel test.
Oh!
Most of that list is very new movies.
Yeah.
And then I thought about it and was like, oh yeah, it totally did.
Yeah.
Barely for a movie that's all about finding that millionaire. But right. She sure did. She had a whole little arc with Gladys.
That's great.
Since we're on that, the trailer, Robin has requested a bit.
So here's the deal. The trailer, like everything else in this movie, seems like they ran out of money while making it. And so the voiceover is very brief, and instead there's a bunch of captions playing over it. So, and the captions are unhinged, so I thought I would have Sean read them in trailer voice, and I will edit them over the rest of the trailer.
Sweet.
Okay. This is not practiced at all.
I sprung this on Sean.
In the car on the way over.
Yes, yeah. Like 14 minutes ago.
And I'm going to tend towards then a trailer voice, not 90s trailer voice. Although that would be good too. But him. The unsinkable Molly Brown. All the wild abandon of the rousing, reveling Broadway musical smash spreads out on the screen to dazzle your eyes, bursting with hearty, joyful pride.
Debbie Reynolds gives one of the most fabulous performances in screen history as Molly Brown. Vital, joyful Molly, America's How to Succeed girl.
Sure, I'm suckered, and I might give out, but I won't give in.
She overcame every obstacle as she rose from rags to riches.
I'm gonna learn to read and write. See what there is to see.
And along the way, she met her man.
How long you been there?
Long enough.
I want a red silk dress.
Yes.
I want to go see Denver.
Yes.
I love the word up. Up where the people are. I guess it's like, here you eat snails, at home we step on them. Well, anyway, as we say, merci beaucoup.
I'll never say no.
Harv Presnell, what a voice. What a personality. Singing gay, wild Meredith Willson songs. From rags to riches, entertainment that's rollicking, lusty, glamorous, amorous, Let yourself go. Dance in the aisles. Join the fun as you scream with delight and shout for more. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer presents a Lawrence Weingarten production. Ed Begley, Harv Presnell, Debbie Reynolds, the unsinkable Molly Brown.
Good job, John.
That was tiring. Those guys.
That's why they could only have that guy say like two sentences.
All right, that's a lot of emotion for this movie. He's very excited.
Yeah, but you were right. They're really overselling it.
Yeah.
And that, which is why I'm surprised that this was as big of a hit as it was, because I can't imagine the people walked out of there saying, you gotta go see the unsinkable Molly Brown.
Right.
Dance in the aisles. That's what really, that's the one for me.
There's two, and especially the beginning, like, the thing that I thought was going to get me through it at the beginning was like, is this a Looney Tune? Like, when they're, like, doing all of the pratfalls and the over-the-time, like, wrestling on the ground and the voices are so exaggerated. I was like, is this a parody of itself?
Right.
And then it stops that and is just kind of shit happening for an hour and a half.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even have a lot of notes that I took about it. I mentioned that Johnny was in fact a good husband. It was nice to see how much he really loved her and what he was willing to do for her. And like, it's kind of sad the moment where she thought he was going to hit her.
Yeah,
and he doesn't. And he's like, what?
Why would I do that? Like, what? Yeah. Sean, you told me how much money they got from selling the mine.
Oh, didn't they have $300,000?
And you looked up in the inflation calculator and you were like, well, the inflation calculator doesn't go back that far.
Yeah.
Jeez.
But it was, I think it was like $10 million. Damn. I think she burned $10 million in
that
stuff.
I don't understand why.
It all worked out.
Well, yeah.
But it all worked out.
Why was it a viable option? Yes, the stove. That's where we'll hide this paper money. And the stove.
And that went
and
on
not
forever,
tell my
too. It just kept going. Those are some very savage what a pities.
That's true.
I like that the royalty got on board and did a little verse. You know what? There's one line of this movie that stuck in my brain, and it ain't the money I love, it's the not having it I hate.
Ooh.
And I was like, yeah.
I like that. Yeah.
I think that's how a lot of people feel.
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
I did fantasize about being a rich person while watching this and trying to entertain myself.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things, like, how gauche and gaudy would I be? Like, would I go over the top and just, like, start buying, like, random shit that I didn't need or didn't want and blah, blah, blah?
My goal would be having my house, when I sell it, go viral as, look at this fucking house.
My house would look so much like the Haunted Mansion. And that wouldn't even be that expensive. Like, that you could do
in a reasonable amount,
You know, we haven't really said all that much, but I also feel we've said all that needs to be said.
I mean, if you haven't seen this by now or heard of it, I can't in all good conscience be like, yes, go to your local library and rent it like I did.
Like, you don't have to run away, right? Like, if your mother-in-law is like, this is one of my favorite films, you can get through those 2 hours.
Yeah.
It's doable.
Yeah.
No, there's not a lot wrong with it. There's very little right with it either. It's just kind of there for the most part.
I mean, Debbie Reynolds is enjoyable to watch.
Great. She's very charming.
The cast is pretty good.
Yeah. I do think that Harv, as much as his face looks weird, has what a voice.
Yeah.
Right?
He does have quite a voice. But that Colorado, like, this was the song this thing was known. It's just a guy warbling about a state. It's not... And Oklahoma, and we knew Oklahoma would. Let's rank it. Let's give some numbers. But I do have math on this one. I started at 40.
Seems generous.
I took away 4 points for her interminable crying after the wedding scene. But you know what? I, in spite of myself, I added 8 points because I got choked up when the French people sang "Belly Up to the Bar" and she liked it a lot.
Oh yeah!
I was like, it's so nice to be seen.
Aww.
44. So 44.
I think I'll go 37.
Wow.
I guess. I don't know. Maybe Sean's pulling me up. I didn't come in with a number. I wanted to shout out Hermione Baddeley. Very charming. As the fellow, I am rich and I don't give one shit what people think about me, lady.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
I'm surprised. I'm the one that's come the highest here, 54.
Good for you. Wow. That's shocking. I think that our true insult to this movie is not our ranking, but that I genuinely don't know if we've ever finished talking about our main episode subject this quickly.
Right.
Yeah. Some of those early episodes when we didn't have the rhythm yet, maybe. 45 is the score.
But Tony, why? The best I could find was that Debbie Reynolds, apparently she has an iconic neon sign in Las Vegas, on the Las Vegas Strip. It's getting a facelift. They're doing some restoration this week.
And, okay.
Also, there is a Titanic exhibit that just opened in Seattle.
Okay.
I think that was that the one that was here. Did you see the one here?
I did not see the one here. That might be. It might be.
It's a touring Titanic exhibit.
There can't be that many. Currently touring Titanic exhibits.
2024.
Right.
It was fascinating. It was moving. It was very smartly done. They gave you, like, you got a ticket while you were in the line, like you got a ticket to the Titanic.
Which class are you in?
Yeah, with a real passenger's name and class. And then at the end,
you find out if you died.
You find out that's whether or not you chilling. Died. I don't like that. But it was very well, and it had all of these, apparently, like, the ocean floor preserves some things very well. So it has a lot of stuff from the Titanic. All this said, the most memorable thing about it is they had an iceberg and you touched it and it was real cold.
It was real cold.
It was so dang cold. All the other stuff was good too, but man,
that iceberg.
There was a revival of the musical recently.
I think so, because I thought that was going to come up when I.
Now to well, 2020. It was an off-Broadway revival, which I'd imagine was fairly short-lived for reasons.
I mean, it's possible the actual musical is better, right? There's many more songs. Maybe they picked the bad songs.
You know what I bet is better is than watching the movie is going to the Molly Brown House Museum in Denver, Colorado. That, like, her big house in Denver is a museum to her life.
Oh, that's cool.
I bet you that'd be good.
I feel like they should have gotten more mileage out of making fun of the Denver rich people for being Denver rich people.
Yeah, like, that kept sticking in my head. I was like, but you guys live in Denver. Like, nothing bad about Denver. And I wish I had known about Molly's museum when I went to Denver. I would have gone.
Not even now, Denver, with weed and good NBA team, like then Denver.
Right, yeah.
To the bingo card, well, we certainly got number one for two or more weeks. We finally got there.
Hooray. I'm pretty sure that she was in a public library during a montage.
Learning, correct.
Yes. And I'm going to count revenge. Really, that whole party scene is revenge.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. It is.
I accept. That's a lot. Does anybody have a bingo?
No.
Did she ever have breakfast in bed? We spent a lot of time on the bed.
We did, but I don't remember breakfast happening.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I still don't have a bingo. This movie spent a lot of time on how great bed is, and I was like, movie, I could be asleep right now. Do not remind me that beds are nice.
My bed is right there. I could really use it.
It's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. Camila, what you watching?
Oh, I have a lot today, this week. Apparently, I managed to squeeze in a bunch of movies. If. It was cute.
Which one?
What do you mean, which one?
The nice
Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, okay. Isn't there also a... Or no,
imaginary.
That's called...
That's
okay,
called
right,
imaginary.
Okay.
I watched that one, too.
Great double feature.
Yes, If was very cute. It started off as I was going to show it to Kaj because they have all of the imaginary friends and whatnot. She lost interest. I stayed on board, and I was still enjoying it. And, it was very cute. I would suggest that. Faye, the Faye Dunaway documentary.
Oh.
It was very enjoyable. I kind of feel like, though, her body of work and her career is so vast and expansive. Mm-hmm. It probably should have been a docuseries because we spend a lot of time in the beginning of her career and everything. And then we it's kind of like in chunks of network and the Thomas Crown Affair, Bonnie and Clyde, And then we kind of end at Mommy Dearest and then just kind of forget. Like, we kind of, oh, yeah, and there's all this other stuff, too. And
right.
And it's like, I feel like we could have spent a little more, because there's a lot of other interesting things that she did after Mommy Dearest
right.
as well that I think. But, yeah, and, like, it's not a vanity piece at all. Like, she's in there, and she's just, like, scars and all. It's like, this is who I am. Like, yeah, they say I'm difficult. I am to work with. But that's just because, like, they don't like a woman telling them what to do, basically. And so it just solidified my love for Faye, per usual. And they also talked to her son, who I didn't know she had a son.
Neither did I.
The beekeeper. Why?
Oh, I forgot to log that. I watched that. Yes.
Why is this why?
The revenge what? Square on our bingo card. Basically, the movie is so ridiculous. The reason I forgot that movie. Presupposes that you are forgetting it as you are watching it. They right. keep re-describing right. the premise of the film.
Right, and it's so full of like this bee puns and bee knowledge and
bee
like,
or
the
not
queens.
To be.
Right.
I choose bee. Yeah,
does right. that really happen?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, God.
No, like the mid-tier heavy is about to kill him. To be or not to be. I choose B.
Oh, you gavolt.
So, trying to find the clip. It's,
but yeah, I mean, I did enjoy it, as ridiculous as it was, but I still like only gave like 2.5 stars, but I liked it because it's just ridiculous. And PETA as a villain, come on now. Like,
and it's like, Jeremy Irons, I know that you just do things sometimes, apparently just to amuse yourself, but how did you end up here?
He like, truly, he won an
more
Oscar.
Lines than anybody else in the movie.
Won an Oscar and he was like, that's that. I guess he went really hard as Scar, but like for the rest of his life, he's just been like, I'll make a movie if they pay me for it.
Yeah, exactly.
I've done my art.
Because that's when he showed up, I was like, oh, this is going to be good then. So I was wrong. And then on the heels of watching Faye, I decided to finally watch Network.
Oh!
And yeah, like I know I'm like fucking like literally like that movie came out the year I was born, so I'd never seen it before. 48 years later, what the fuck?
Shockingly relevant movie.
Yeah, like it's completely relevant, but like the ending, I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like this is insanity.
I love that movie.
It was great.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it.
That's one of those movies I saw in movie camp.
Sure.
And probably was too young to totally get it, but like really liked the weird, like the Ned Beatty scene.
Yes,
and then,
that was really good.
And then saw it again in the theater when I was like in my 20s. Mm. And I was like, oh, I get it now.
Yeah.
And then saw it again in my late 30s and was like, oh, I super double get it now.
and
I feel like that's just going to happen every 10 years for the rest of my life.
I'm just going to get more and more outraged by it.
I am mad as hell.
And I'm not going to take it anymore.
I feel like we're going to take it.
We're all taking it.
Taking it.
We're all grabbing our ankles and taking it. Imaginary.
See, I liked that more than If.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Like,
I just like that we, I said it on the show, I like that we went to the weird imaginary realm at the end, where I feel like most movies like that would just have some fog and shit, and no, we went to the kooky imaginary place, and that made me go, sure.
I think the directing was bad in this one.
Oh, yeah.
Just like, I think that's what really just kind of pushed me over the edge, especially like that woman who was in Split, and I don't think I like her, and I kind of saw her that twist coming a mile away. Like when she shows up, it's like, oh, you're evil. And it's just, I don't know, I wanted to like it. And then on Robin's suggestion, Postcards from the Edge, I watched it. I enjoyed it. Just one of those movies that I would have never thought to watch ever in my life. And it's always fun to watch Meryl Streep and Shirley MacLaine. And then it's like all of these like top tier actors before they were, you know, like Oliver Platt shows up. I think Bradley Whitford is in there. Dennis Quaid, a very, very young Dennis Quaid. Like, it's just crazy.
Annette Bening is so good in it.
Gene Hackman.
Yeah, Gene Hackman kind of slumming it. I think that this was one of those movies where the talent involved, people were like, oh, yeah, I will show up and be in this movie.
Yeah.
Right? I love that movie. And I was going to say, but Tony, why? It's because there's a ton of relevant shit also streaming. And because we delayed recording, I was like, yes, I get to rewatch Postcards from the Edge. Yes, I get to watch A Night to Remember. Yes, I get to watch Fargo, although I fell asleep during Fargo. But yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it's good. I would suggest that. Serial Mom It's on Netflix right now. Oh, I don't know why I decided to watch it. I did. And I forgot that it was John Waters. So my expectations kind of went down a little bit.
Oh, you don't like John Waters?
Not particularly.
You have to be in the really right headspace. But I get there sometimes.
Yeah, like Crybaby. I think I was good with Crybaby.
I don't think I've seen that.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
And then I want to say Hairspray.
Hairspray.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think I enjoyed that. But
me too.
Like, other stuff is just like, meh, it's a bit of that.
when he's the most himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this is amazing. Like, Kathleen Turner, like, God bless her. Like, I was.
Serial Mom is one of those movies that I know I have seen, but couldn't tell you a thing about it.
Yeah. I thought for sure that I had seen it.
Yeah.
And all I remembered were, like, the kitchen scenes, really. That's all I could tell you. And, like, I just keep seeing things about Matthew Lillard being, and I was like, I don't remember Matthew Lillard being in Serial Mom. And he was.
Tiny baby.
Yeah. Sympathy for the Devil. Nick Cage at his cagiest. This is...
Yeah. What is this movie? I don't think I've heard of it.
Nicolas Cage kidnaps some dude, takes him on a joyride. Because he is trying to get revenge on this guy who is telling him that he has mistaken him for somebody else. So he's not the right guy that Nick.
This is from last year?
Yeah.
And just no one noticed? I didn't hear about this at all.
Nicolas Cage makes 3 movies every year that no one ever hears of.
Yes, because I constantly see his face on, like, scraping out, recently added, streaming this.
He still owe money to the IRS? Is he still in that situation where he's
probably.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't know. But it's unhinged as hell. But if you love a Nick Cage movie, like, this is a Nick Cage movie to watch for realsies. Presumed Innocent.
The series.
The show, the movie.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about it.
Yeah.
How'd you like the movie?
Loved it.
Yes. So, sorry to interrupt. Yeah. Colin and I started the series, and I immediately was like, oh, I feel weird feelings about Ruth Negga being the wife because of, spoilers, the ending of the original one.
Right.
And then I was like, oh, they're probably going to change the ending. And Colin said, what's the ending of the original one? And I was like, I refuse to tell you. I'm renting the movie. We're watching it. And that movie is so good.
It is. And you're right. A lot of it does hinge on the, I really want Harrison to be right. Or I want him to be innocent.
People do not give Harrison Ford enough credit for being a good actor. He is a genuinely good actor. Mm-hmm. He shows up in, you know, recites his lines sometimes. But when he wants to be, he's great. And he really walks the line of you want to believe he's innocent, but it's plausible that he's guilty.
Right. And like the last 15 minutes of that movie are like really kind of like if I hadn't known the result at the end, I would have just been like, you know, on the edge of my seat. But like the whole time I'm just like watching. Like, the entire movie is, like, looking for, like, the chink in the armor, but, you know, don't find it. But, yeah. So, yes.
One thing do you want to talk about the series at all?
I mean.
I texted Camila as soon as I finished. I was like, did you watch this whole thing? She was like, yes.
Jake fucking Gyllenhaal. It's just, it's a different animal. Like, if you have watched the movie and then you want to go in and watch this series, separate the two. They share characters, they share the name, they share the premise, but it's not, these are two different Rustys.
They share characters' names, right? They're fully different characters.
Exactly. This is like an alternate universe.
And O.T. Fagnanly, I'm not sure how to pronounce his name, is making choices.
Right. Like, seriously, I don't know. Like, it took like the first 3 episodes, I'm like, why is he doing this?
I think Jake Gyllenhaal's well there.
It's unnecessary. It's like he's just one of those actors like, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to do a voice.
Right? He's a Tom Hardy. Yes. Maybe he's buddies with Tom Hardy. Maybe. I was like, you know how you have fun?
You know what you need to do?
Yeah.
With this role? Give him a funny lisp type thing.
I mean, I watched the whole show in a day. It is a good binge watch, but like, it's not actually good.
It started off as good for me anyway. And again, I hadn't seen the original movie beforehand.
Okay,
so
yeah.
It was like I'm coming in fresh, coming in, you know, and I really like Jake Gyllenhaal in these types of roles.
Mm-hmm.
I like him a little more weird, but like this is, and I still just love like the whodunit, did he? You know? Ooh. And I just wanted it, one outcome. It's what I was expecting. What they did do was stupid and ridiculous.
So stupid.
It makes no sense whatsoever unless there's going to be a season two that spirals into something else.
Apparently there is going to be a season two, which, boo.
Oh, come on.
Stop turning limited series into series.
Like, let's not do this. And finally.
You should have to give your Emmys back.
I agree.
Yeah.
Mike White, I'm talking to you.
Yeah, because this should have, like, that's under the understanding is, like, you did this in 8 episodes. Great. Like, now it's like, no, now you're going to tell a story. Unless we're doing a completely different universe now.
Mm-hmm.
That's. Mm-hmm. You know, we're doing an American Horror Story thing. It's
right.
Not.
That I'm okay with.
Like, I will accept that.
Me too.
Or exploring sociopathy. And finally, I saw A Quiet Place day one. Bravo.
Right.
First of all, I don't know. I cried like 4 times during mm-hmm. that movie.
Yeah.
And full on wept at the mm-hmm. end. Mm-hmm. And that's never occurred to me in a horror film in my life.
It's
so amazing. And it's like, yeah, like you're saying, like, sorry, John. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, John Krasinski, I couldn't have given 2 shits about his family during that entire. No. The entire.
You were only interested in the aliens and the world. And now all of a sudden, they hired, what the hell's the guy? The guy
Joseph?
Who did. The guy who did Pig, they hired him.
Oh,
and like,
that guy.
What are you going to bring to the film? Feelings.
Like, I'm going to make you Mitch's feel. And yeah, and that he did. The relationship between Lupita and Joseph Quinn.
Who is Joseph chemistry. Quinn? Would I know him
the
from
guy
something?
That played Stranger Metallica in Stranger Things?
Did you watch the last season of Stranger Things?
No.
And what was it, Eddie?
Yeah.
It Eddie?
So.
Okay, I have an image in my head.
Yeah.
He's amazing.
He's great.
Like, they're so good. Now I want to see them, their rom-com mm-hmm. together. I want these two in a rom-com film.
Different universe, probably.
Yeah, but, absolutely. Yeah. But, I mean, so fucking beautiful. And just, like, the moments of, like,
mm-hmm.
in the bar. Like, in the bar. The magic
yeah,
show.
Yeah, oh, the magic show. And every time the cat came back, I'm like, oh, yes. There's hope because this cat is here.
My cat would not survive very long in A Quiet Place.
No.
She is a chirpy little bitch.
No, like Winston.
I love you, Sprinkle.
I was always, every time the cat ran off, I was like, you know, as much as I love Professor, like, I'm sorry. Like, I hope you can catch up, buddy, because I'm out. I am not. But yes, A Quiet Place. Oh, day one. It's just amazing. I'm a little disappointed that Jamon.
Two-time Academy Award nominee.
Yeah.
Jamon Onsu.
Yes.
That sounds right.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That he was only on screen for like 10 minutes, but.
I guess he's in the second one. Like, I think
I
he's
remember.
The recurring
character. Are they doing A Quiet Place day 2?
I don't know.
And to be honest, like, this was actually day 2 and 3.
Yeah. Yeah, a few days are past. And also, you could have called it A Loud Place.
Yeah.
They're all screaming. But yeah. Aliens come down, everyone's screaming.
Right.
It's not quiet yet.
No, not at all. Yeah. Yep.
A quieting place.
A place that is getting quieter. Speaking of Nicolas Cage, Long Legs.
How was that?
Didn't you talk about that last episode?
No, I talked about Maxine last episode.
Okay.
Are you sure? Didn't we last record on...
I don't remember hearing about
Tuesday the 9th?
Maybe I was doing that thing where I remembered the future. Or maybe we had a conversation not on mic, like friends sometimes do.
Yeah, it could have been that.
Yeah,
we had our game night. We talked about it when we were playing board games.
Yeah,
oh,
that's
yeah,
probably.
Probably
okay. All right, as you were.
Long Legs is good. It was just built up as amazing, and it's not. It's one of those that is... Let's throw in all the spooky things we can think of, even if they don't make any sense or add to this plot mm-hmm. in any way. Hey, how about a whole subplot about creepy dolls that goes nowhere? Yep, we got that. It's that.
Oh, brother.
Without, if I could say this without spoiling, you know, the point A is murders and point B is Satan, and you could have drawn a straight line, and instead we went all over the damn place for an hour and a half. Nicolas Cage is great and weird, and Michael Monroe is very good. It's just not quite the movie was built up to be.
That's too bad.
What else? Deadpool and Wolverine. Am I the only one?
Yeah,
I almost saw it the other day, but I was already very overstimulated. I was like, I cannot do this.
Well, that's an overstimulating one. I liked it a lot because it is pure fun. It is, especially after last year's Marvel stuff was so heavy.
Yeah.
You know, going in there and just having a good gleeful superhero action time was very, very satisfying after a long break from Marvel in the theaters. Yeah. They're both great.
I heard there's a lot of Canada jokes.
A lot of Canada jokes.
Always here for a Canada joke.
A lot of Disney buying Fox jokes, obviously.
Less here for that.
And a few of them are like, okay, we get it. But it's just so satisfying. This is how I realized there are four distinct subgenres of cameo in an MCU movie. Mm. And this has all four of them more than once.
Okay. Well, what's the typography?
What are the categories?
Okay. Two of them are pretty standard. Secondary characters from other Marvel properties.
Right.
Okay.
So that's post-credit scene where Charlize Theron is here and she plays a character and I have to lean over to John Feitner and say, who is that?
Well, not even that necessarily. That's a different category. Okay. That character from Loki is also in this movie.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't want to give away any of them because they're all just like other people we've met before are also in this one, and I guess I didn't know that.
Okay.
The next step up is what you're talking about. A famous person I didn't know is in this movie
right.
as either a new character or a one-off or something. And then the special ones, major Avengers star is in this movie and I didn't know it.
Okay.
Which does not happen that often. And holy shit, how is that person playing that character also in this movie? Yeah. The Spider-Man thing.
Oh.
They have all of those. They have every variety several times.
Is Jude Grey Scott in it?
What's that?
Jude Grey Scott, is he in it?
Which one's that?
He's the person who was supposed to play Wolverine until he hurt his back. And his whole life changed, and Hugh Jackman's changed a lot more.
that would probably be too much of a kick in the teeth.
Okay. I think that would be, if I were Jude Grey Scott, I would have gotten them on the horn and been like, hello, hi, got a deep cut for you all.
I'll say that there's a case like that, but a less tragic one.
All right.
Wolverine and Deadpool are in a different universe than the Avengers.
Not anymore. This is the one where they entered.
This brings them in. Okay.
Every Venom universe is the same universe if you want it to be.
Right.
Venom is not in this universe.
No, he left. He showed up for a minute.
He swapped back into his home.
He blinked in for the length of the Spider-Man movie that had all the cameos, but then all he was was in the post-credit scene.
Yes, okay.
That's Camila clicking her pen because that's the only way she can accept this.
Uh-huh. Final question. I just saw that RDJ is going to be Dr. Doom.
Gavolt.
Yeah.
He's buying a new house.
He got his Oscar
and now he's done.
He's like,
I'm gonna Jeremy Irons this one.
I'm like, and I understand, like, it's probably a separate universe. I also understand that Dr. Doom keeps his mask on the majority of the time.
Right. Traditionally.
Because I remember being pissed that Julian McMahon was Dr. Doom and had his fucking mask on, hiding his beautiful face the entire Fantastic Four.
Clearly they're going to do it. They would be stupid not to. If they're literally just like, how weird that universe's Dr. Doom looks suspiciously like our universe's Iron Man. That would be, I'm sure they're going to do a thing where in whatever universe that is, Tony Stark grew up into Dr. Doom instead of growing up.
Because that is a very interesting take.
Yeah.
And I'm willing to explore.
Yeah.
I'm willing to go on that journey. Robin is unconvinced.
They're pulling all the panic levels, the X-Men lever, the bring RDJ back lever.
Let things end.
not when this movie made $205 million in 3 days.
And I think
in the year of our Lord 2024. Right.
And I think Robert's probably got another couple kids that need to go to college.
Mm.
Yeah. go to mega college.
I feel like he could send a small country to college at this point.
Sure. Yeah, it's like you can't be this bored.
Yeah.
Bob.
Twisters. Anybody see Twisters?
I saw Twisters. No. It was fun. Yeah.
Why are we rooting so hard for this dude in the world?
Glenn Powell?
What? Yeah.
I find him very handsome and charming.
Really? Yeah.
I really like him.
I'm on board.
Yeah.
No argument.
Sorry, I've been on board since Hidden Figures when I was like, who is that handsome man?
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
So I am okay with him. I think since our last recording, watched him and Sydney Sweeney Shakespeare rom-com.
That's better than this.
I would say that's for sure a better use of your time. But Twisters was fun. I think it's better than Twister.
Oh, no, I disagree.
Okay, I also have some kind of vendetta against Twister because I used to have a vendetta against Helen Hunt, which is unfair, and I have exercised that from me.
I didn't really. I mean, I gave it a 5 out of 10.
I think it's a 5 out of 10 complimentary.
I'm not. And I was primed to like it because, so I was out of town. I was doing a travel piece. It's too complicated to get into, but I was in kind of middle of nowhere, West Virginia, doing a travel piece. And I was like, let me see. I'm willing to drive an hour. I just want to go to the movies. Mm-hmm. I have nothing to do. And that's how I discovered I was within an hour of an Alamo Draft House.
I was just going to say, is there an Alamo Draft House in West Virginia?
The closest Alamo Draft House is about 3.5 hours from here. It is like the closest thing that you might still call the DC suburbs in Virginia. Like if you drew a direct line between here and the closest Virginia, you could be, it's, I think Alexandria, Virginia has an Alamo Draft House.
I had no idea.
Yeah. So if you're down in that direction. So I was like, oh my God, I'm going right now.
That's amazing. It
had an amazing pre-show and I had the queso and everything like I'm in Texas and I still didn't like Twisters.
Have you been to an Alamo Draft House?
Yeah,
I haven't.
Austin. I fucking love it.
Like, that's so good.
I mean, I assume these days it's not the same, right? And it's going to continue to get worse now
it's
that like.
It's still pretty good.
Bought them? Sony bought them?
Somebody did, but I mean, for me, like the food is one of the big draws, but the biggest draw is the pre-show for 30 minutes before they do all of this. And I was like, is it going to be good? We saw creepy off-license Wizard of Oz cartoons. I saw the trailer for Volcano. I saw actual earthquake footage from Los Angeles. It was so good. I think they're still, it's still the best.
Yeah. I looked hard into like, franchising. Like I was like, how much would it cost?
Right.
Oh, I've thought
for
about
me
it
to
too.
Do this.
Anyway, I don't think the original Twister is that good of a movie. What it has is weirdo charm. What it has is like Tori Amos songs and characters that don't make any sense and Philip Seymour Hoffman doing all of that. And this was the same movie again without the weirdo charm.
Oh, that's the same.
I did miss Todd Field.
Yeah. No, not big on Twisters. I will close by saying I've watched Carnival of Souls twice in the past 2 weeks.
I still think about that building from time to time.
Because, it was this month's Steel City Horror Show.
Oh, okay.
The audience was much like this room. It was everything from, wow, that's a classic, to, why did we watch that? Like the whole range was evident in the room. Unfortunately, it was also the most recent Joe Bob episode. So literally the thing that we're imitating also did it 2 weeks ago after we had booked and committed to showing it. And that's how I discovered, Robin, I just have to let you know, these are all like seasoned professional actors. Everyone in the movie.
In Carnival of Souls?
Yeah.
Interesting.
When your whole thing was, the acting. Why? Which I would never have thought that they were all early regional theater actors.
Okay.
So like in the early days of what we would have here as the Pittsburgh Public Theater, Pittsburgh City Theater, these were those people in the Midwest. So they weren't certainly not used to acting on camera. That might explain why it
does.
Was so weird.
Yeah.
But in the Joe Bob episode, he goes down the incredibly long and storied careers of all of those people, including the landlady who I would have sworn was not a professional performer, was in Harvey on Broadway.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
How about that? Also, Candace Hillegas is still alive and will send you a signed 8x10 for $25.
Oh, great.
Did you set that up?
I'm going to get around to it. Mary Beth's not listening, but there's a nice Christmas one where she's driving the car, but instead of the ghoul's face in the window, it's Santa.
Nice.
I'm going to get that for
Mary
Beth.
That's really
cute.
I like that a lot.
No, the horror show was great, and our surprise guest was Rick Seaback, who revealed long after I had booked him that he had been to that building and filmed there.
Cool.
Yeah.
It's funny. He was just in the park the same day as my kid's field trip. He was just sitting at the bench.
And were you like, local celebrity Rick Seaback?
Yeah, like nobody else really knew. Yeah. Like it was weird because the teacher was like, and don't go past the bench where that man is sitting. Like it was, I'm like, hey, that's Rick Seaback.
That man.
I also learned they're trying to do concerts there again. Like Bleachers played there like a month ago.
Okay.
Yeah. Great. I want to go. Sorry, it's been forever. You can't handle the truth.
Yeah, so I watched A Night to Remember, right, which is a Titanic movie from 1958, and it's a British movie, and it's legit great.
Nice.
It's somewhat harrowing because, a huge ocean liner crashing and
right.
sinking and thousands of people died. A thousand-ish? Whoever. A lot of people died, guys.
Yeah.
1,400, I think.
Yeah. So the thing that is so weird about it, though, is that a ton of it happens almost exactly the same way in Titanic. Like, there's a lot of scenes that are like, I remember this from Titanic. So I don't know if that's a... They're working from the same historical record and like people wrote down like whole conversations that they had. Like, that's possible.
Or James Cameron's just a big thief.
Or that. So I didn't have time to look into that angle very much. But anyway, I recommend that movie. It was really good.
1517.
Woof.
Wow.
Tragic day.
Very, very sad.
By the way, the shots of the boat itself at the end of Unsinkable Molly Brown were just footage from A Night to Remember. They were like, we're not getting more. Someone just did this.
Like we said, made for 18 cents.
Yeah.
Oh, I did this whole like 50s melodrama kick where I watched a couple Douglas Sirk movies, All That Heaven Allows, which is pretty good, and Written on the Wind, which is pretty garbage, but Dorothy Malone is great. It's her Oscar-winning performance. And Giant. Have either of you ever seen Giant?
No.
That was one of those movies that like I have started a million times, but it's almost 4 hours long. And so it just never, I never finished it. And I finally was like, I'm doing it. I'm finishing it. And boy, is that movie a lot. Everyone is doing the most. And the thing that is so weird about it is that, you know, it takes place over like 40, 50 years. And so they put James Dean in age makeup. And just seeing old James Dean is like weirdly heartbreaking, even if it's not very convincing age makeup. And also young Dennis Hopper is in it. And he looks fake. Like, it's his actual face. But he looks like a cartoon because he... You know he's Dennis Hopper, but he's a young man.
But it feels wrong.
Yes. But I'm glad I watched it. Rock Hudson.
Oh, nice.
What a star.
Yeah.
He's in all of those movies.
Really?
What a star.
So you're just doing a Rock Hudson
kick? Not on purpose. I did watch the two Douglas Sirk movies together because I was like, this is fun. I like these. Oh, and speaking of Douglas Sirk, I watched The Go-Between, which is another Harold Pinter scripted, much less pausing, movie. It's from the early 70s, got an Oscar nomination, that's why I'm watching it. The score reused in May, December. Huh. They started playing the score. I was like, why do I know this? And I should have looked it up way earlier because I kept being distracted by it. They just lifted it for May, December.
Sometimes.
Yeah. You're
like, you know what? It should sound like that other thing. Let's just get the other thing.
Right.
Anything else?
I don't think so.
I watched The Public Enemy from 1931.
Oh, wait. Really? I got one. I got one. Sorry. Under Paris. Under Paris.
Oh, the thing with the sharks.
Sharks in the Seine. And this is what I watched.
I thought this was going somewhere totally different.
Nope.
Because I've been watching documentaries about Paris Hilton.
Oh. Did you watch the Teen Torture Inc. one?
Yeah.
Oh, rough.
Yeah.
Rough. We'll talk more about that off mic. You know, the day that Joe Biden dropped out of the race, I was like, I can't do society. Let everyone figure this. I'm going to let the chips fall and I'm going to distract myself. And I watched this ridiculous movie and I highly recommend it. Like, I don't know if it's actually good, but boy, is it fun. There's freaking freshwater sharks. Lots of people ripped in half. Berenice Bejo just crushing it.
I think I would like to watch that.
You will love it, Sean. Yeah. Highly recommend it. And also, we put the English dub on because Colin couldn't do subtitles, and it's actually a pretty good dub. Oh. Yeah, I know some people are like, never a dub, but come on.
I'm not gonna, but I'm glad to hear that they're trying hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Watch Public Enemy because the main thing I was doing on this travel thing.
What is that?
The James breakthrough Cagney? For James Cagney in 1931.
Oh, I think I've seen that.
The main thing I did on this travel piece was there's this hotel in Romney, West Virginia called, motel, the Cool Wink Motel that is notable for, it has a guy doing that. Camila made a little face. That's the logo. It's famous for being clean, maintained, preserved, identical to the way it looked in like the 60s.
Oh, cool.
So it's like that shag carpeting, wood paneling, and everything. Yes. It's so great. But it is clean, and it is, everything works. Even when it's like the air conditioner is that boxy beige plastic thing set into the wall, and it works perfectly. They just maintain everything. When you check in, they say, would you like a DVD player?
Adorable.
And they hand you a standard edition DVD player and point you to a wall of films. Huh. Complimentary with your...
Well, they didn't have those in 1960.
But still...
Pushing my glasses up.
Still, I'm like, can I retire here?
I do like the 5 VHS tapes in the cabin vibes.
That's
of that.
What it felt,
yes,
like. It was so good. Let's draw a movie. Where can you go after the unsinkable Molly Brown? You can tangle with what is widely regarded as one of the worst comedies of all time.
Right.
Sank a whole ass Oscar campaign. We drew Norbit, everybody. We landed on Norbit.
I'm actually kind of excited to watch Norbit.
Wait, is this the... This is
Eddie Murphy.
Yeah, but it's not the one with... Is this one Steve Martin? No, this is...
No, that's Bowfinger. Does anybody have a
VHS? I don't think I have one.
No, we only have our Beyonce veto, and she will not
release this
save us.
Movie.
Beyonce, we need you.
I don't...
No, I'm just fascinated by the argument that he lost his Oscar because of that movie. He lost his Oscar because he fucking yelled at the Academy in the 80s. He was like, you guys do not give black actors Oscars. Fuck you.
Robin.
Yes.
You just took everything that we could possibly say next week. That was the only
that was all that was
the only topic of conversation.
What if it's actually good?
I know, right?
We could be good.
Here's hoping.
Right.
But it's
is this a fat suit one or a plays a lady one?
Both.
He plays a lady in a fat suit?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
I mean, Norbit is not the lady in the fat suit, but she is there, right there on the cover. This is a comedy / melodrama.
Okay.
Melodrama?
According to IMDb.
Well, it will go well with my Douglas Sirk kick and Giant.
Unsinkable Molly Brown was released June 11th, 1964.
The Beatles.
No.
I'm out.
Elvis.
Who else is out, yeah, in the 60s?
No.
Dean Martin, a Brat Packer.
First, I'm trying to determine if this is the song that I think it is. Yeah, okay. I don't know.
You know, there's no way we're going to get...
It's been covered many times. It is often used in films and TV to...
Is it a Tommy James and the Shondells song?
No, indicate that two characters are about to go do something. Two characters are in love, so they're...
Going to the chapel?
Yes.
Ooh, all right. Nice. I have no idea what that song is called or who sang it.
Yeah, what's the info?
It's called Chapel of Love, and it's by the Dixie Cups. Dixie Cups.
Oh. Yeah. Those were blink sound effects, and I agree.
Okay, Tony's mad because we didn't talk enough about Molly Brown. We only felt like, well, there was probably only 20 minutes. And Tony's like, here's what's going to happen. You're going to have to watch Norbit. And then you're going to have nothing to say about the Dixie Cups.
Tony.
Isn't that like the little cup that you brush your teeth with?
Yeah, it sure is.
Who and why?
Let's just go. Let's just go.
Put the aircon back on.